Welcome to the Safety Podcast, where we connect health, safety and environment to keep you learning, evolving and having a positive impact. Thanks for taking the time to join us for this episode. Let's get started. Hey there, I hope you're keeping good. We haven't been around for a couple of weeks due to the madness of the global pandemic that, of course, everybody has been affected by very recently. So I'm sure you've all been affected in some way or other, both personally and through whatever work you're doing. I'm sure it's had an impact on you, as it has with myself and my own family. And of course, there's been a bit of disruption to our normal schedule of podcasts because of it. So apologies for not getting anything out in the last few weeks, but I'm sure you understand. But with that said, I think it's really important for everyone to keep doing what they can do. And you know that old saying of don't worry too much about what's out of your control and concentrate on what you can control. And something that we can control here and for me includes connecting with my fellow health and safety professionals and business leaders to support each other, including making content here for this podcast and hopefully providing an outlet where you can focus away from what's going on in the news and the media and everything else that's currently happening. One thing I want to mention is that rather than assume what you guys need right now, it would be really great to hear from you about anything or about anyone that you would like to hear from on the podcast right now to help you during this time. It can be related to anything because I don't want to jump to conclusions as to what type of support that you need. So please do feel free to get in touch with me directly either on LinkedIn or via richard@safety.com. And of course, I'll listen to your needs and do my best to help in some small way. So, okay, let's move on to talk about what we're discussing on the podcast this week. So back a few weeks ago, I managed to catch up with Jonathan Dempsey. Jonathan has been on a few podcasts recently with some of my contemporaries, so you may already have heard from him or about him and be familiar with what he does. But he has a background coming from specifically environmental health, but he expanded out into various operational risk roles across various large companies, including logistics, retail, and so on. Most recently owning his own consultancy, Red Laces, where he's focused on empowering profitability through creative risk solutions. And I think that tagline does set the tone well for our conversation around transactional versus transformational management within health and safety or within operational risk, where we discuss on the podcast here how HSE leaders can have a much greater impact by lowering or getting rid of the existing barriers to delivering real value within a business. It was a really enjoyable discussion to hear about Jonathan's approach, especially within bigger businesses. But of course, as with any of these models or approaches that can be used and developed for any type or any size of business, keep your ear out towards the end where Jonathan uses a couple of really familiar examples to contextualize this idea of transformational leadership for us. Okay, rightio, that was a longer intro than what we're used to these days because of these exceptional circumstances that we're in. But now it's time to head on over and chat with Jonathan Dempsey. Okay, Jonathan, thank you for coming on here to the Safety Podcast this Friday to have a chat with us. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. How are you?
Very well, very well. I've been noticing this week a few of you guys have been hanging out at the HSE Congress down in the Cotswolds, is that right?
It is an excellent couple of days, really informative, really insightful, great network, stunning location.
I've seen some of the photos you posted up there. I was thinking, wow, looks gorgeous. It's a lovely part of England. I've never actually been there myself, but I have to put that one on the bucket list, I think.
Certainly, and after the storms of last weekend, it was rather tranquil with a view across the lake, and I sat there through one of the sessions watching a swan going by, which you don't get to do every day, and of course mindfulness is hard sometimes to just slow our thinking down. So being able to just take time out, and there's some really inspirational sessions. There was Sir Clive Woodward had given a keynote speech around the DNA of a champion, and there were several kind of other rugby players that talked about mental health in quite some detail, and kind of the stigma and the challenge that they had, and I guess aligning that with the construction industry where suicide is quite prevalent as well.
Was there any one big takeaway that you sort of left with?
I think for me, and it's I guess a mantra I use pretty frequently, is it's all about people. And I think that really just summed it up. Just the energy, the hunger to learn, the the networking and the being able to play back, you know, different people's sort of perspectives and takeaways from the sessions. I still really need to take some time out to reflect, because there were so many sessions and over the 2 days that there was a lot to take in. So I actually do need to take some time and reflect on some of it.
Good stuff, good stuff. Well, it sounds like all the hard work the guys have put into to planning that looked like a good event, and sounds like you enjoyed it and plenty of good networking was done. So good stuff for that. And so thanks for coming on, as I say, to join us on the podcast here. And you obviously have quite a diverse background yourself through various high level roles and progressions over the years, which you chatted in some detail with me about. Do you want to give the audience just a quick overview of that? Because I know there's lots that you could talk about here, but just to give them an outline of where you've sort of came from and what you currently do.
Yeah, my background is environmental health. So several years as an environmental health officer, kind of working with business to support around food hygiene, around health and safety, around environmental management, whether it be regulating atmospheric emissions from a steel foundry or a timber manufacturer or vehicle resprayer, you know, investigating food poisoning outbreaks, investigating accidents, and just coaching various businesses. So a whole range from that. I've then worked in lots of different multidisciplinary roles through hospitality, catering, logistics, transport, bioscience research. Again, you can see on my LinkedIn profile, I've been here, there and everywhere, and done lots and lots of different things. For me, it's about people, and it's about being curious and getting into finding what other people do in different sectors and different roles and how I can add value to them. One of the things that I did quite a lot of reflection last year, and I actually kind of reflected that everything I've done, the two words that kind of captured it really are risk and sustainability. In various ranges of, I mean, for instance, one organization I went into as head of safety, health, environment and quality. And after a month, I was asked to become head of safeguarding and child protection. And that wasn't something I'd ever done before. So, you know, that put me out of my comfort zone, but I was able to go and lead some really progressive approaches on that with a charity. Similarly, another role I went into, I was project managing a multi-million pound building refurbishment program for bioscience research laboratories, where I really needed to engage with the stakeholders and a whole range of stakeholders around what was required and what was going to be needed moving forwards. I was doing that at the same time as an MBA as well. So burning the candle at both ends a little bit. But yeah, I've just got that insatiable appetite to learn and try new things, which probably relates to me going on a flying lesson next week as well, which will also put me out of my comfort zone.
Yeah, I think some of us are like that. I can certainly relate to that. And that's why I love getting people like yourself on to the show here to listen to your own experiences, you know, and it helps guide us, doesn't it? You know, listening to other people. And we have discussed a few different things about what we'll chat about today. One of them that stuck out for me was when you mentioned about the, in terms of approaches, and when I say approaches, we're talking about not only to safety, but to business and operational management in general, looking at the transformational approach versus the transactional approach. And you'd give me some dialogue around that. Could you explain to me or our audience a bit more about what transformation versus transaction means to you in terms of business?
Yeah, I think for me, it's about, well, what it isn't, probably easier to start with. So I guess there's a perception that health and safety, if we take that, is about rules, about regulation, about compliance, around legislation, and about avoiding the negative. So taking a, say, analogy of a football club, it's about trying not to get relegated. It's about keep us safe, keep us legal, and can reinforce a stereotype and can reinforce a silo where business can marginalize the safety function to do safety for us. I guess my approach, and I'm not saying it's right or it's wrong, is that I start with the business. So I start with understanding, you know, what is the business that I'm in? What's the operating environment, the organizational context, who's the customer, what's the brand, what are the values? And then from that, try and really get a sense of what are the main operational risks across the business. Now, that again, it might be food hygiene, child protection, security, fire safety, health and safety. It's going to be, depending on the nature of the business, it could be any or all of these to a greater or lesser extent. And then do a gap analysis on where do I think the key areas are now. Work with, you know, work collaboratively, cross-functionally to really get a sense of how is it similar or different across the functions, and also get out into the business around the sites to really get a sense of those, how those perspectives are, and then create a strategy or strategic approach that can be owned by the business and the board, and then lead teams to deliver on that. And now, you know, from a safety point of view then, or any other regulatory part, is to understand what's the leadership and the culture within the organization, because any statistics around accidents or incidents, or whether it be, you know, food hygiene complaints or quality fails, whatever it might be, they all happen in the context of the leadership and the culture. So the board, the executives are setting the tone for what's important and where the business is going. So whatever the safety team does, if it's going to be relevant and impactful and influence, it needs to be in tune with the business, and therefore it needs to understand the business and the priorities and the culture.
Somebody reached out to me just recently to ask for some advice around an upcoming challenge that they have in a new role within health and safety, naturally, that they have, but the organisation that they're working with or going to be working with, I believe, has a long way to go in terms of improving their safety. And you know, one of the things that I thought about was really getting to understand how the business operates currently, before you even try and do anything. What's your opinion on, you know, when you do that recce, that information gathering, and you find out what is actually happening, what the leadership, you know, is like, how the business is run? How do you use that information to inform your strategy or to mould your strategy?
So, yeah, certainly, I guess the first thing to say is that I do that with and through other people and through other teams. So it's very much an iterative process that I'm constantly reviewing and informing and building. So I'll start with, so my approach is to start with an outline, so a pencil outline drawing of some categories. And so the first one will be around leadership and culture. Second one will be around governance. Third one will be around risk management, or a dynamic approach to risk management. And the final one is the measures. You know, what gives me a handle on the numbers, the metrics, and the qualitative side around measures as well, not just the pure numbers. So I'll start with those, and I'll be picking up the clues from the language, from the things that people do or don't do, how they operate. Mm-hmm. But I'll also be sense checking that all the way, whether it be speaking with members on the board, whether it's getting out onto the shop floor, getting out to different sites, and I'll be asking others what they think, and building up a sense of the language that's used and what people's understanding is, and can continue to reinforce that. And at various instances, then I'll play that back to the business to say, you know, I've been here for a couple of days, a couple of weeks. This is what I'm hearing. So what I'm sensing, this is what I'm seeing. Here are some perspectives without a value judgment, but this is, you know, how does this ring true to yourselves? Yeah. And by and large, people say that's about right. But once we've got that, then it's starting to work out, well, where do I think we need to take this business, and start to put the journey together and start to build that with the team. So the approaches that I've used, and certainly over the last, say, four or five roles, which has been in transport and logistics, you know, automated warehousing, live theatre, student accommodation, and a few of the bits and pieces, I'm evolving and developing my thinking, but also applying it to the culture and to the business itself. So I might put together a framework and put this up on some slides to say that here's my understanding. And somebody might say, well, we don't call it that here, or can we change it to it reads like this? So that language and that culture, mm-hmm. again, it's being in tune all the way through. It's being in tune with, so not being not necessarily being a chameleon, just blending in, because I need to be able to, you know, hold true to the approaches I'm looking to bring in, but finding that blend, because otherwise it's not going to land and it's not going to be deliverable.
Okay, so understand. So you're really looking for that right mix between integrating into the existing culture and obviously bringing your own flavour or your own approach into into the system or the operations to make that change. Do you find that most of your direction comes from the top or the bottom when you're doing that? You know, when you're listening to people on the ground, you're talking about, you're getting information and you're sense checking it. You know, where does your influence come from primarily, do you think, whenever you're going through that strategic planning?
So essentially, I kind of bring it with me as such, and work when I seek to lead and influence the C-suite and teams cross-functionally.
Okay, so it's a mix really between everyone, I guess, or at all levels, really.
It is, yeah. So I see it in a very fluid, in a very dynamic way. So it's not. So I'm not hierarchical. So I certainly see in my mind, I approach things with a very flat structures.
Okay.
So I'm very much so. Whilst I clearly would respect and want to influence the C-suite, actually, it's really important to get out to different people at different levels, at different sites, and also in different functions. So whether it be sales, marketing, IT, engineering, facilities, and particularly some internal communication. So one of the teams that I will generally work closely with will be the internal communications team and the HR and marketing. So really getting working closely with the more people oriented functions within a business, but also to get an understanding of how communication flows within the business. So if we're taking safety health and safety as the particular discipline, then how does the business share messages around health and safety? How does it share what's important? How does it promote it? But also, how can people interact with it? How can people voice their concerns or get help? Or even if you take down to things like safety alerts, if there's been a major incident, how does information flow? And is it just all on the intranet? And particularly where you've got people that work remotely or don't have access to online material, how do we consider who our different audiences are and how our audiences interact with or need or want different types of communication? And again, you can't do that just by sitting in the board and saying, well, this is our communication strategy, but it's seeing how it all fits in together.
I know you talk about this yourself, and we've discussed it already about the dangers of looking at safety in isolation as opposed to looking at a wider sort of operational risk approach. Can you give us your thoughts on that and a bit more depth, if you could?
Yeah, I mean, it might sound, and I'm sure it does on a safety podcast, sound a little bit controversial to say. I'm not passionate about safety. I actually, in my roles, I rarely use the term safety. So, and I think it can be a bit of a catch-all. So, what is safety? If we're talking about in transport and logistics, the number one of, let's say, the top five risks we're going to focus on, the number one is going to be workplace transport. And within workplace transport, we might be talking about the driver and the vehicle. We might be talking about the traffic routes that forklift trucks are working on. But I wouldn't be talking about safety. Let's talk about workplace transport, start to break it down into some meaningful things, because safety has got a stereotype, not just in business, but if you go and ask people on the high street, what does safety mean to you, or what do you think about, it generally conjures up, I suppose to some extent, conjures up negatives, but also people know what they think safety is, and therefore not looking to engage. Where if you start to talk to facilities and engineering and operations about, within workplace transport, what are the key challenges you have today? What are things that you need support on? All of a sudden, you're creating an environment where you're actually now giving somebody a platform to share what they think, which actually is quite, I'm not saying it's groundbreaking, but it's often very refreshing for people that don't get that opportunity to be heard and to say the kind of their experiences. So actually, safety within, for me, I would normally look at it I perceive it in the context of broader operational risk and again, within the broader cultural and leadership way of the business actually operating. And therefore, I think another dimension to risk is about, with risk, you think risk and opportunity. So again, if safety is about avoiding the negative, risk isn't necessarily about avoiding a negative, because we take risks. And if you think about motorsport or other kind of activities people get involved in, actually risks are good. To some extent, you've got to be able to take risks and try something new. But it's what are the opportunities then? How can we leverage and add value from this? Now, if you take an example of when I was asked to take on safeguarding and child protection for a commercial charity I was working for. Again, safeguarding and child protection is a risk. You know, it was at a time when there were lots of headlines on the news around where things were not going well from a child protection point of view with celebrities. So there was clearly a risk there. But actually, I saw an opportunity as well. So there's a very well-regarded charity that, you know, that looks to protect and support children. And I went to that charity and said, if I'm going to be held safeguarding child protection here, and we put together a new safeguarding policy and get our business really behind this, would you endorse our policy? And you know, they said, well, we don't. That's not what we do. We don't endorse policies. I said, well, look, you know, we essentially take it back to base levels. This is something that we're both passionate about. Both of our organisations are operate in this space. And if we were to look at a strategic alliance where if you were to look at the policy and make sure you're happy with it, would you put your name to it? And ultimately they said yes. Well, actually, that starts to leverage some added value, because when you're competing then with other market, other private sector market companies for summer camps and the like, you've actually now got, you know, something that says to parents and guardians, you know, here's an organisation that's trying to do the right thing. So a risk that wasn't necessarily being thought of as a risk actually became a commercial opportunity.
A great example of looking at something from a different perspective and a lens. I think and I've said this before on this podcast, you know, our default position as a safety manager, or whatever you want to term it, is one of defense and not taking risk, of course, because that that goes against the whole narrative, doesn't it? Whereas your approach, you know, appears to be the reverse of that, which, you know, I really like, and it's refreshing. And with that in mind, and through your experiences, Jonathan, to get to where you are today, is there anything that you could suggest, I suppose, from a practical perspective, even as a thought process, or maybe something more tangible that the audience could do to help them try and discover where they can add value in the businesses they're working in?
Yeah, we all have, I guess, different sort of models that we've learned through study and whatever. I guess from mine, because the environmental health sort of degree was multidisciplinary as well, because I've looked at project management and lots of other dimensions. Probably that's my curiosity to want to go and do that. I think within a business term, and in very simple practical terms, I think getting to understand some different ways of working across different functions. So a simple thing might be that I did in a recent role was invite other functions to team meetings. So in one organization, I invited the marketing director to our team meeting. So that way, marketing is not a natural bedfellow for health and safety, whereas facilities and engineering probably are. So if you invite a marketing director or a comms director to your team meeting, to your health and safety team meeting, your regular team meeting, and sort of share with them some of the things that you do, but also, you know, get a sense from them as to, you know, how do they work? You know, how do they organise their team meetings? How do they engage with the business? What are the challenges that they have? And what technology do they use? That's one thing to do. On the reverse, it's get invitations. You know, send maybe other members. You know, it doesn't have to be the head or the lead, but send members of the health and safety team meeting to other team meetings. So go along to a sales team meeting and find out what they're doing. Find out where, you know, what clients they're working with. Find out what their challenges are. Find out how they work together as a team. It's just one simple thing. So really starting to not just go out and say, I'm going to go out and see the sales team today, but really start to become, you know, ingrained into the business, really start to get a sense of how the business works and the language it's used elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good and simple way to start seeking opportunity within a business, because ultimately you're going to be able to understand how it operates better and get insights into the different functionalities, as you were saying. But not only that, as you're mentioning, you know, a communications director or marketing manager comes into a meeting where health and safety is primarily discussed, or, you know, environmental management, they themselves may come up with really good ideas, and, you know, their creativity can be really powerful in itself as well. So it doesn't always have to be you is generating ideas, and then obviously the other people in the room can input into that conversation also. So yeah, I think that's a really good tangible way to do it. have to say, now in my experience, sometimes I've went to some technical meetings and it's been gobbledygook that I've been listening to, and not got a huge amount of value. But I guess you don't know until you try.
No, well, I think it comes back to, for me again, it's all about people. It's all about people, and it's all about relationships. And I think you invite people from these other functions because you've got access to them. But again, it's important to see the person behind the title. If we're thinking about mental health, who's to say that the communications director or the marketing director isn't or doesn't have a member of their team or close family who could benefit from some of the insight around mental health that maybe the health and safety team are focusing on in their session. So. And getting exactly, that message out. So I think there's definitely that, always that coming back to that people connection. And also the language, I guess if it's easy to be in our bubble, and it's easy for a safety team or any of the function in a business to use the language that they use, that their profession, that their technology, whatever uses. And I think you help to simplify and get more reach when you bring other functions to play, because they can kind of say, well, I don't understand what you mean by that. Or from our experience, we tried that, but if you change it this or call it this or deliver it at this time or in this way, actually, we found that this helped. I think just going back to another practical example.
That's an interesting point, actually, regarding the language and identifying when whoever it is that's communicating is using language that isn't decipherable to maybe people that they're communicating to outside of the organization, as well. So that's another really valuable point. Sorry, go ahead. Apologies for interrupting.
Yeah, that's okay. And I'll say another practical example, something I introduced, which I've never actually seen done elsewhere, is for riddles. So certain types of accidents will have to be reported to an enforcing authority, accidents, incidents, and diseases. Typically, or almost exclusively, a health and safety team will investigate those, and they'll investigate them in isolation and create a report. One of the things I introduced in a FTSE 250 was that as a member of the operations board, I invited the operations board to get involved in these investigations. And the first response is, well, how are we going to get involved? We don't know anything about health and safety. So I said, this is about your role in investigation. So I'm not looking for you to carry it out, but I'm looking for you to want to get involved and be curious about what the investigation is, but more so, what as a business can we learn from it? So we had the procurement director and another sort of service delivery director. The next two incidents that we had the following month, I said, right, I'm going to phone somebody up and invite you in. So we invited the procurement director to get involved in this, to essentially shadow the visit and to find out more about the circumstances and to see what we could do. Now, the operations director or operations meetings started with a talk around safety first. So for the next meeting, the procurement director opened the meeting by saying, Jonathan invited me to come out with his team and investigate this incident. Here are the circumstances of the incident. What I've now looked at as through procurement is I've looked at the design of the equipment that we had and materials we were using. I've now gone back to our design spec and I've now gone and looked at how we can actually get a different supplier and a different design for the future. So whilst it won't happen with our existing stock, actually for all new builds and all new refurbishments, we will now put this in place. So all of a sudden, there were kind of some unintended consequences, unintended benefits that were coming out of this, that we've now actually, from my investigation, more than we could ever have done as a team, we've now got the procurement director starting to think with his or her team about how they can change design spec for the future. We also then had the procurement director wouldn't have normally known any of the members of our team, so they're starting to build the relationships. And you've also then now got members of a health and safety team getting exposure to, spending a day with a director from the operations board, which you think of career progression and that diversity of thought, that breadth of thinking, that's just experience that you would not normally get.
Absolutely, and I think there is a really great opportunity there. It's another thing that often we're afraid to maybe give up the. I think a lot of the time people are reluctant to give away that power or that control over investigations, or they may be bringing people into the team, but they're being very selective over who they include. But I think, as you rightly say, Jonathan, there's a huge amount of opportunity, and depending on the context of what it is that you're investigating. You know, there are strategic ways that you can get people who you think might have, you know, really strong influence on the outcomes of the investigation and make real tangible changes. And that example of the procurement director is great. I think whether that's intentional or not, that person was involved, you know, it's a great outcome. And I think a lot of the time the less that you look outward, you know, to get more people involved, then you know, the more restricted you are in terms of the benefits you get from your investigations. And that type of approach, I think, lends itself to a lot of other things within business and within HSE. So, I mean, taking that back to your original conversation or original point about transformation versus transaction, how do you think everything we discussed here you know, relates to a transactional approach versus a transformational approach? Could you contextualize that for us a bit in terms of what we've already said here?
Yeah, I think the transactional is very much the status quo. I don't think it changes anything. It doesn't strive for more. It strives for being safe and being maintained. I think the examples that we've given, and I've just kind of picked a few at random, but for me, they are transformational. They're different. They're innovative. They're progressive. It's trying something new. I mean, it takes some courage, because ordinarily, you know, to ask executive members of a board to want to come out to join something, I mean, quite often you wouldn't have the idea, and if you had the idea, you might think, oh, I won't ask them that. They won't go with it. So I think it's really having the freedom of thought to come up with ideas about what could we do, what would it take, what might be different, what might help, you know, learning, not just our learning but others, and what's going to drive it forward. So I think it's having that freedom of thought to try new things.
I think you've used some great examples of, you know, of ways that people can go about actioning, you know, what is a more people-based approach and a more progressive and a more open approach. And, you know, you go back to the importance of people within the HSE profession learning about business, and then once you learn about the business that you're working with or in, then that allows you to let people understand, you know, what you're trying to achieve much easier when it comes to health and safety. Is there any final thoughts that you'd like to leave us with on that?
I think the one area we've perhaps not touched on is around mental health. And I think, again, if we come back to a transactional approach to health and safety, I think we would probably see that mental health might get handed over to the safety team to do, and then the safety team might become stuck, because if we're focused on compliance, how do you provide compliance around mental health? Whereas actually this transformational, people-based, we're all learning and growing within the business, and we're creating those relationships. Actually, we're creating the space to start to really understand where mental health fits into the organisation and what the challenges are. Mm-hmm. And those early signs. So that being curious, I think we start to be able to, you know, be less concerned about, you know, facts and figures and numbers and statistics, and more about those shades of grey, all those colours, that rich tapestry that's actually going on and being played out in the business. So I think if you were looking to try and understand where an organisation is in terms of mental health and how we can support and add value, if I was going to pick do you go with the transformational approach or the transactional, I'd be going for the transformational.
How does a mental health or an approach to mental health look in a business if you're taking the transformational approach versus what it would look like if you were doing the transactional approach?
So if I was to sit here now and look at how it might be different, if I was to be in an organization where health and safety was being delivered through a transactional approach, I'd be focused on compliance. So therefore, how would I get a sense of whether we have a problem or not? What metrics have I got that tell me? So I might be looking at HR data, and I might be looking at absence and the reasons given and whether it was stress or anxiety or the like. And if my numbers are relatively low, I might be quite satisfied that we don't really have a problem. if I was taking a transformational approach and I'm caring and I'm looking to bring as an individual and as a team, you know, create a culture of care where people are open and can trust, and we're getting out and seeing people, I'd be looking for the signs, and I'd be looking for, you know, I'd be getting a sense of, you know, there's a head of site that's off sick. There's a team that are stressed. Yeah, I'd be looking for the clues that would give me a sense of, you know, where things are.
Okay, so it's more to do with just getting close to people, building those relationships, and really listening to what is going on between different teams, and not dwelling too much on the hard quantitative data. So I suppose it goes back to the quantitative versus qualitative again, doesn't it, Jonathan, a wee bit?
I think it does, because the transactional is not going to show me much in the way of numbers. And actually, as a safety team, I might not even be thinking about mental health until either the board ask me as a team, you know, ask us as a team to investigate it, or in terms of, you know, the numbers start going really high and creating some alarms. But they're not likely to, because we won't have the infrastructure and the governance to be able to capture it. I think from a transformational part of things, I would actually be curious about mental health in the first place. So my team and I would actually be starting to look at, well, you know, where can we get involved? You know, we know from the sessions we've been on, we know from the media that mental health will be a greater or less extent an issue for us as an organisation. How well are we supporting our business? What infrastructure do we have in place, and what measures do we have that give us a sense of where we are, and how do we engage with our teams and our business around what interventions are going to be appropriate, what support mechanisms are there available, and what support mechanisms are going to be the right ones at the right time for our people, and how effective are they, and how do we bring mental health and wellbeing into the mindset of the C-suite and help them to see that as part of the overall strategy for growth for the business?
Do you think personally that businesses and bigger businesses will be able to find that balance between striving for their growth and innovation and pushing things forward whilst, you know, keeping tabs and creating that mental health, you know, that positive mental health space for their workforce? Do you think that's something that is achievable?
I certainly wouldn't claim to have, you know, that great an expertise in the area of mental health and well-being per se. There are other professions, other individuals that would have greater perhaps insight into that. I think what it is fair to say is that there can, in my experience, there can be a disconnect already between the perceived growth and productivity and innovation within a business and its health and safety performance. So I think there's already a potential for a strong disconnect and for health safety to not be considered and not be invested in and not be supported. And mental health and wellbeing, I see, was potentially further down the pecking order than that, so to speak. So it needs to be, I mean, certainly in recent years, we've seen a lot more in the way of mental health first aid courses and the like. And again, they all add value. However, the value they add is perhaps constrained by, or certainly limited by, the real intention, I guess, behind it from the C-suite. So as part of a wellbeing strategy in a package and it's all integrated, then it's going to add value. But if it isn't, and it's just a tick box exercise, then actually the fundamental, you know, challenges within the business and the support that people need is not necessarily going to be addressed.
Great stuff, Jonathan. Thanks for giving us your opinion on that. I think that's something for everyone who's working in a capacity as a business leader or an HSE leader to be very aware of the risks around the transaction versus the opportunities that are there around transformation. And it's been really interesting to hear your perspectives and your experiences. And thank you again for coming on to the Safety Podcast with us today.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you for your support and your encouragement and interest.
So that was our conversation with Jonathan. I hope you found that valuable. Talking about the difference between seeking transformational change within a business versus just transactional. And there are quite a few points that we can take away from that. And just to sort of reflect on some of them there, Jonathan was mentioning the importance of trying to move away from the marginalization of HSE to the sidelines of a business. We talk about that quite a bit here, and that's because it's a real issue, you know, and we have to acknowledge that and ask ourselves the question, you know, within the business that we're operating in, how marginalized or siloed are we currently, and what can we do about it? Jonathan mentioned that it's really important, especially if you're going into a new business, but equally if you're in an existing business and maybe haven't taken the time to think about it too much, about understanding the leadership and culture that exists, because really that sets the tone as to how things play out further down the business and across the business operations. So if you're moving into a new business, it's really important to take the time to understand that, understand how things operate, and gather that information. And really as well, once you have that important information across the different sections of the business, you can play it back to the organizational leadership and let them know what you've found. And that's often a great platform or foundation for a conversation as regards to trying to make meaningful change. And something that Jonathan was mentioning there too is, you know, the whole concept itself can be a bit overwhelming, but it's often very important to remember that any change is a fluid and dynamic process. And Jonathan mentioned that any change process that we try and go through has to be iterative. It can't be just, you know, one and done, and we can't expect to have the results or the outcomes that we seek by trying once and trying to get it right first time. It's about making small steps and small changes and developing and molding that into a fashion that's necessary as you go along. And to be able to do that, you have to work closely with those people-oriented functions within a business to understand how communication flows and how information flows around the business. Jonathan mentioned about HR and marketing and sales even, you know, being the types of areas of the business that you want to engage with. And part of that process is creating an environment that provides a really comfortable platform for people to let us know what they really think. And often that's not easy when you're coming from the direction of health and safety, where there is a preconception perhaps, or you know, there's an image that's built up over time within a business. So it really is up to us to break that mold and that status quo if we really want to achieve meaningful change. And that might constitute things like inviting random people from different functions across the business to team meetings that they're normally not involved in, or getting yourself invited to meetings where you normally wouldn't be considered. And you know, if you're sitting here at the moment, particularly in the current circumstances, perhaps you're not working for a business, but even some of these concepts, they're great things to talk about. If you're in an interview for a job, for example, you might want to discuss how you may go about implementing some of these ideas in terms of learning about the business. And that's really powerful, because it shows you're keen to actually understand how the business operates, not just to try and implement how you think it should operate. Okay, and it comes back to bring this all together again, really just about people and relationships. And Jonathan gave us a contextual example using mental health there about how a people-based approach produces a much healthier framework for addressing challenges within mental health that the business is faced with, versus just that transactional quantitative approach, which of course, if we're using data that can't be trusted or that's limited in terms of its true value, then of course that limits what we can achieve with it as well, and certainly can send us in completely the wrong direction. So a final thought for this podcast, I think we've been talking about the importance of how we are effectively bridging the gap, or that we have to bridge the gap and that disconnect between HSE and other parts of the business. So a question to ask yourself as a takeaway here is, how well are you currently bridging that gap? So that's it for today. Just to finish this up, we recently reached 50,000 downloads here at safety.com. It is an arbitrary figure, but you know, it's a big figure for us, and it really gives us great motivation to understand that we're reaching a wide audience and hopefully helping some of you along the way. So I just want to say personally a massive thank you for supporting us and for listening in when we release some of our content. So until next time, I realize that it might sound a bit like Jerry Springer saying this, but I think in the current context that's perfectly acceptable. So stay safe and look after each other. Thank you once again for joining us for this episode. We really hope you got value from the content. If you'd like to provide us with some feedback, which we would obviously love, please take a minute to rate and review the podcast on whichever platform you're using. Also, if you enjoyed it, please hit subscribe to make sure you catch our future episodes. And of course, share it with anyone who you think may find it useful. For more free resources and to find out more about what we do, you're always welcome to visit us at safety.com. Until next time, take care and good luck.